there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Just a moment. Welcome, Jim Roop to the Rick Emerson radio program. Later on, Peter Conlon's going to join us from the Oregonian, etc., etc. We have more from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. And we are asking you to complete the following sentence. The closest I ever came to dying was... and at the end of the show, the best call will win the final pair of passes to House of Midnight, along with a copy of the brand new Onion book, Destined for Destiny. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson program, live from Los Angeles. CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How's life, brother?
Life is beautiful.
Is it? Well, you guys have got that fire under control, looks like, finally.
Yeah, it looks like they'll have it contained by 6 o'clock or so. If not already, it's about 90% contained last I talked to them.
All right. Any lead on whoever the cretin is that they set the fire?
You know, I think they do because they're not talking. Usually when cops say a lot, they don't have anything. But when they start keeping things close to their vest, they don't want to spill the beans and screw something up. So I think they have something.
As soon as they start saying things like, well, we'll let you... when they clamp down, that means that they got some guy in a room and they're trying to beat a confession out of him somewhere. Which is fantastic. And, I mean, because whoever... I mean, not to make light of it, but because whoever did this, I mean, it's not just arson anymore. I mean, it's homicide, right?
And it's murder. Probably first degree, too, because if... It would go easy on the person, or easier, I should say, if they would have turned themselves in right away.
Yeah.
Once those firefighters died, lots of remorse, and, geez, I'm sorry, we just thought we were, you know, I mean, and it happened at 1 o'clock in the morning, so it was deliberate. And,
yeah.
And it's going to be tough on them because they've not turned themselves in yet.
Yeah, and so, I mean, where are they? Because it's not just one, it's several.
That's what they think, yeah.
Yeah, firefighters. So, yeah, whenever they get this guy, they're just going to stick him in a hole and have him beaten with a hose for the rest
set
of his life.
Set him on fire.
Which is fine. I mean, I'm really okay with that. So,
eye for an eye, babe.
Hey, by the way, we meant to ask you this because I know you've done a lot of things in your radio career. You've not just done radio broadcasting for CNN. What did you say for KFI?
Yeah, we're KFI, KNX, KRLA. I've been fired from some of the greatest radio stations in Los Angeles.
Fantastic. And so the question is, we're looking into, because the Halloween season is upon us, we're going to be writing our own obituaries here on the Rick Emerson radio program. And so we're wondering if you have any advice or any suggestions for this, because you have covered the death. Who is the most famous person whose death you have covered?
Ronald Reagan, probably.
Really? Oh, that's right. That's right. You were on the clock when Reagan died.
Yep.
Anybody else leap to mind? Sinatra? You were there for Sinatra, probably.
Bob Hope.
Bob Hope.
There's been a lot of them.
But see, Bob Hope and Sinatra. Well, see, all of those guys, they probably already had the story written largely, right? Except for the dates.
Yeah, because that's what we do. We sort of collect obit material, and then we file the stuff, and when they die, it gets released.
And then you just punch in the blank.
Yeah.
You know, it's like with, I had a friend of mine who swears to God, he swears at the people at the A&E who do the biography channel, that as soon as you become famous, as soon as you have any hit movie, he's convinced, as soon as you get one record, a number one single, anything, they produce the entire thing and they just have it in a can, no matter who you are.
Yeah, and just constantly update it.
Yeah, so all they can do, you know, so when Sonny Bono dies, you know, they can do Sonny Bono, hit a tree, you know, it's at the age of 52, and that's all it is, man. It's just got some intern in the basement.
Yeah, he's not far off on that.
No, just constantly assembling and re-spooling material for you. So tomorrow we'll be presenting these on the Rick Emerson Show. By the way, before we let you go, I got to tell you, to what extent have you had any interaction with CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini?
I haven't had absolutely none.
Now, have you ever even spoken to him?
No. Well, sort of on conference calls.
Does he? Let me ask you this. I mean, there's a bit. We're having a little bit of internal discussion here about whether there seems to be two schools of thought here in the Rick Emerson program. One school of thought is that Bob recognizes that he is not perhaps an inherently exciting or pizzazz-filled individual. And so he is just sort of embracing that and making that his own. He's just sort of going with it. He realizes that he can be perceived as being a little dry. And so he's just grabbing that with both hands and making that his persona. And then there's another faction, that is to say the Sarah Dillon faction on the Rick Emerson Show, who believes that Bob is only days away from pulling a Pat St. Clair and refusing to ever come on again. Just vanishing into the woodwork.
Oh, I forgot about Pat.
Yeah, see, that's what, now see, does Pat even work for CNN anymore?
Yeah, I talked to her over the weekend.
So now, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
She anchored, because I was working the fire all the weekend. She anchored on Saturday.
Okay, so look, I know this sounds like a stalker kind of thing to say, but she ever ask about me? She ever mention me?
Oh, I'm sorry, she hasn't.
She ever,
She wants her ring back, though.
Never... I never come up in conversation. You ought to... I don't want to put you in a position which... I don't want to put you in any sort of...
I can work it in, I promise I will.
I was going to say, I don't want to put you in a position that is awkward for you, because wasn't there some unpleasantness that unspooled with you and me and Lisa Goddard or something like 6 months ago? Wasn't there some kind of...
I don't know that it involved Lisa, but, you know...
There was some sort of discussion that happened...
I was told to rein it in a little bit.
There was... Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, now hold on.
I guess someone's monitoring... monitoring us.
Right now?
I don't know.
As we speak?
They just do.
Sarah and I are actually looking
That's
around the studio
with
right
the
now.
The internet, man. People can tune in whenever they want.
Well, we actually had to... Did we tell you about this? How we had someone from CNN call and ask where we were streaming from so that they could record your bits?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, because here's the... Okay, well, and now I'm all awkward. Now we're...
Some
now
random
we're,
person from CNN.
This was several months ago.
Now we're speaking in hushed tones now.
And this was during
the whole Laura controversy.
Changed anything.
No, well, see, no, here... Okay, well, now...
This is when we were bitching about Laura all the time.
I don't know what you're talking about, Sarah Dillon. I'm a big fan of Laura.
No, that was... We had a guest on, and they were bitching. Not
we had someone we didn't know. Someone that we have no association with.
Bob Constantini.
Yeah, no, it was Gary Baumgarten.
Oh, yeah, probably.
That's who it was. Put everything in, the guy was gone.
Yeah.
It was him. He did it.
It's always been him.
The guy who's not in the room. No, because now we're talking about three different things. A, I remember that there was some, like a couple months ago, there was something where Sarah had speculated that Lisa Goddard had a huge crush on me. And
whatever.
No, that's what it was.
You are so creepy.
Sarah had this speculation that Lisa had a thing for me.
Rick had it for himself.
And I think we had mentioned it to you, and then you had apparently brought it up in conversation with somebody or other. So there's that. Now you are saying that you were told by somebody at CNN to, quote, rein it in?
Well, to be careful when I'm on the air, not to become part of a show. And I thought, well, isn't that the reason?
Is that true? Were you? I mean, I hate to put you in an awkward position here, but they actually told you not to become part of the show?
Well, in so many words, you know, without,
Was this following a specific incident?
No.
It was just sort of a generalized, don't play any of that Rick Emerson's reindeer games?
And it wasn't even, your name didn't even come up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So this is some sort of a, Jim, we're not mentioning any shows in particular, but there may be certain radio programs that wish to drag down your journalistic reputation.
I wouldn't use the term drag down.
you wouldn't, but were there other people who did? Were there people who alluded to that?
Well, it was just that I was told to remember the company for which I work and the standards by which I should work, and, you know, don't do anything to
sully the reputation of CNN.
Oh, yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, you know, we are all about...
It's not my job to give opinion. Not my job to, I'm not on the stage at a comedy club.
Yeah, way to stick to that.
I
can tell you, though, that is my...
You know, I would set those arsonists on fire.
No,
that's not my opinion.
No, that's a journalistic fact.
Yeah.
That really is a fact that they ought to be set ablaze. All right, well, there you go. Well, now that we've just vaulted, we've really pole-vaulted right across the line into just impropriety here. So... I get, if you get a chance, and if you can somehow work this into conversation with Pat St. Clair, because for those who are maybe new listeners to our program, Pat St. Clair, who was the CNN radio correspondent in Atlanta, I believe, for some time, had been on our show and had always, I felt, had a great time. She had an endearing, girlish laugh.
She has that.
You see, and she found me amusing. And it is my theory, Sarah's rolling her eyes, she found me amusing, I believe, and I don't believe it was put on. It is my, and then one day, though, our producer at that time, Matt Peterson, called to book her, and we were just told, Pat would prefer to no longer come on Rick's program. And it was my theory that...
That it didn't come from Pat?
It did not come from Pat, but they relayed it on her behalf. They said that, you know, she would prefer to not come on Rick's program as a correspondent anymore. And that was the last time we had her on. And it was my belief that Pat was developing a secret crush on me, and that she felt uncomfortable coming on this program because she was not able to... maintain journalistic objectivity because of her feelings about me.
Well, I've developed a crush on you, and it doesn't stop me from coming on.
Well, that's because you're a pro, Jim Rude.
That's right.
You're a cut above, my friend. So I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just saying if you talk to Pat St. Clair, you just drop Rick Emerson's name in. Just see, gauge her reaction to that.
You know, usually if I do something on the weekends, I usually talk to her. So
okay, well, there you go. And just tell her Rick Emerson says hello.
Yeah, okay.
And just kind of see what she says in response
something
to that.
Something in passing like that, yeah. I can do that.
Okay, there you go. God, see, that's what I'm talking about right there. That's what when we say Jim Rube goes the extra mile, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, sir.
Whatever you say, bud.
All right, brother, we'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay, thank
right,
you,
there you go. CNN radio correspondent Jim Rube in Los Angeles. I do believe that we are...
Your feelings, I think, are hurt because you have lived under the pretense that you thought that she didn't work there anymore.
I thought
she's
was
there,
gone.
And she doesn't want you, Rick.
It's not...
She does not want you. She doesn't call. She doesn't write.
Thank you.
She doesn't even appear on our sheets.
Hey, dig it in. Thanks. Thank you for that.
Well, maybe she
wonder if she appears on the sheets for other radio stations. What if we were to look at, like, you know, KVI in Seattle or something, and Pat St. Clair is available? All right. That's the great thing. It's like it's not. No, your girlfriend hasn't. The ex girlfriend hasn't moved. She just won't return your calls. Who is that on your screen over there?
Oh, I found the picture of Suzanne Summers. That's trying to find you. I'm gonna put
that's
it on my blog.
Suzanne Summers?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you got to show me again now,
okay.
Because I didn't know who it was. I thought it was Sarah Jessica Parker.
No.
She looked all bony and.
That's what I was talking about.
Oh, she is not ageless.
And I can't make the picture any smaller. It's really awesome.
No, you don't want to make it any smaller. You want every one of those wrinkles to. God, I wonder how long
it's
it takes
too
to...
too big. It's not uploading onto my profile.
I wonder how long it takes to dry her out after a good rain. Good God. She's like the cover. She's like the surface of Mars. Those are canals. Good God.
Yeah.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. We are asking you to complete the following sentence today on the phone. The closest I ever came to dying was... ... Finish that sentence today, and at the end of the program, the best call will score the final pair of tickets to House of Midnight, along with a copy of The Onion's new book, Destined for Destiny. It's 503-733-2970. Quote, the closest I ever came to dying was... let's see, we got the Ryan here. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
I actually had kind of a weird story about cremation for you.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Well, my uncle had his dog cremated a couple years ago when it died, and I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, when he got the ashes back, he came in like this brass urn.
Yep.
And, you know, you had the news story about how cremation is the new thing for people.
Yeah, really. Apparently cremation is hip with all the kids.
Yeah. Well, a couple years ago, my aunt passed away, and they had her cremated. Now... keep in mind, the dog came in a brass urn.
Oh, is there going to be so? Is this? I sense a kooky, wacky mix-up happening here.
No, we get the right ashes and all, but my aunt came in a little cardboard box that looks like a cigar box.
Just sort of a. Was it like a discount funeral? Was it like a no frills cremation?
Oh no, this was. It cost like $4. And that's what they presented the ashes in.
Here you go. Look, do you have a shopping bag of some kind? Hold on. Just let me get a. It's like one of those Chinese takeout things with the metal handle. Good God! All right.
Yeah. So $4,000 for a cardboard box and like $85 for a brass ring.
Well, see, here's the thing. If they can cremate you, like if you can go to like the Pike Place Market in Seattle, and they've got like the Mount St. Helens ash where it's made into like a and it's made like a toothbrush holder in the shape of a seal. I don't know why they can't do that with like human ashes. You know what I mean? If they cremate me and then you, I don't know, just make me into some sort of a make me into like a shoe polisher or something. You know what I mean? Or like like a pepper mill or something.
So you want to be recycled then?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, why just let those ashes go to waste? I mean, waste not, want not. So, you know, I figured to make me into something, like make me into, I don't know, like a ceramic ice cream scoop or something for the family. I feel that I want to keep on servicing the people even after I've passed away.
Or maybe it's a little garden fertilizer.
Yeah, something like that. All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, they put me in the salad bar at a pretentious restaurant. All right, that's Ryan. Wait, hold on. For the love of God. Wait, hold on. And...
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
It's our good friend George in Wilsonville. Hello,
hey,
sir.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up, George?
Rick.
Yes?
Please be remembering the phrase, sweet chocolate love. Does that ring a bell?
No.
Not in regard to Pat St.
I never called Pat St. Clair sweet chocolate love.
Yeah, oh, no, you just called her chocolate love. That's correct.
I did not call Pat St. Clair chocolate love.
That is this too. That's why you lost
No, him. No, I did not.
He was in your hand. He's eating out of your hand like a bird, and then you uttered the phrase that we were all thinking.
Because that's... Okay, referring to Pat St. Clair from CNN as, quote, eating out of my hand like a bird is a little creepy.
Well,
secondly, I don't believe that I ever referred to Pat St. Clair.
Sarah, back me up.
I never called
Pat
St. Clair chocolate love.
Yes, you referred to her like that all the time. Nobody was surprised when she didn't want to come on the show again.
I would never call a CNN reporter chocolate love.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I haven't used that phrase. I have. Rick Emerson has used that phrase, as Gabba would say.
He has proven himself to have the greater recall capacity.
I'm just saying it doesn't sound like a thing that I would do.
It totally sounds like it.
It sounds like a thing that Clyde would do. It sounds like a thing that Clyde might say that I would then refer to or pass along. It doesn't
Clyde
seem...
Clyde has a way of rubbing off on you like a fungus. So
would I even work that in? How would I say, welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, sweet chocolate love, Pat St. Clair?
She hung up. She said, there's Pat St. Clair, sweet chocolate love.
Well, how would she even hear about that?
I don't... now you're not denying that you could have said something.
I'm not.
How could she have heard that?
I'm just saying I don't have any recall.
Okay, yes, you're like the Enron executive.
I have no recollection of any such event or occurrence. It seems almost wholly unlike me. I'm not saying that I would never use that phrase, but it does seem unlike me to have called a CNN reporter chocolate love, although I do believe it is true that she is. I can say it now. She's not coming on anymore. I do believe that Pat St. Clair from CNN is chocolate love, though.
He was giggly chocolate, silky chocolate love.
Okay,
I almost got killed in a four-way intersection, actually. I was trying to turn left in front of two lanes of traffic, and both lanes stopped. And there were huge trucks there, and they both waved me on. So I turned left in front of them, but unbeknownst to me, they had recently painted in a third lane to their right.
Oh, that's like going out Wile E. Coyote style.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So I started to roll. And they just created an on-ramp to the freeway there where there was nothing before. It used to be a bike lane, so I thought it was free and clear. And all of a sudden, I turned left in front of them, and then all of a sudden, 1 second after I cleared that lane, cement truck fully loaded.
Cement truck.
Yeah, almost took out my rear bumper.
All right.
So that's how I almost died. And then you wouldn't have heard my dulcet tones on your radio.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Hey, can I ask you, can we ever get Adam Carolla on this station as well?
I'm sorry, like the Adam Carolla show?
Yeah, I was just down in San Diego, and he was the next best thing to Rick Emerson.
They got him on here, you know.
Where?
He's on at KUFO. He's on our sister station in the morning.
Well, I don't stray from this channel.
God bless you, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
Right, there you go. There's Adam Carolla. Not Adam Carolla. There's George in Wilsonville. No, Adam Carolla is on our sister station, KUFO. Let's get one more here, then we'll break. We'll come back with Tim Riley. Kenny, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
What's up, brother?
Hey, not much. Just wanted to call you and tell you about my near-death experience.
Yeah, please, we're asking people to complete the following sentence. You got to quit putting that thing on the screen. It's freaking me out.
Wrinkled, leathery
face of Suzanne Summer. Is that at your website?
Yes.
Please now, everybody must go to sarahxdillon.com. See, now that's the thing. That's what I'm talking about, that photo. If it's minimized, if it's real small...
Oh, you can zoom in.
She almost looks passable, but as soon as you zoom in, that's when you just start to see crevices and rivulets everywhere. We're asking people to complete the following phrase today in honor of Halloween. The closest I ever came to dying was... can he complete this phrase? Closest I ever came to dying was...
When I almost fell into the devil's churn.
Really? The devil's... That the punch bowl thing?
Down south of Waltport.
Yeah, that's a bad... Yeah, my...
That's where my dad proposed to my mom.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the devil's punch bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could totally...
Yeah, that thing's scary.
Not the devil's punch bowl, the devil's churn.
Now, what is the... I'm thinking of something else now. Where is this? What are you talking about?
It's south of Waltport on the Oregon coast.
All right.
And I'm hydrophobic, and I had some friends from college that wanted me to, get over my fear of water. And I walked down to it. It's a churn, literally.
Now, when you say it's
a lot of moss and wet rock there.
When you say a churn, what is that? What is a churn?
Basically, it's a crevice in the rock. It goes. It's a crack in the rock.
Is this like an inlet where the water comes in and just pounds it like it's a it's the wake of a boat almost?
Exactly.
All right.
Down near Cape Perpetua. But I was down there, and it was at night, and basically my friends were trying to get me over my fear of water.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And what happened was I slipped on the moss and almost slipped into it.
And I haven't been there, although my wife, she goes to that area a lot, but I got to tell you, I lived in Southern California for a while, and in like La Jolla and San Diego, there are places like that, where it's like a little inlet, and the water comes in, and it's exactly like being in the propeller wake of a boat.
All the gravel just turns it out, and it makes it loud.
And let me just tell you this. Is there a scarier word in the English language than the word undertow? I mean, undertow is a terrifying concept. If you've ever felt it, it's terrifying. I got caught in undertow one time, and I got to tell you, that is the most terrifying sensation. And I had a life vest on, so I knew that I wasn't going to go totally, but it did. I mean, you could... Let me just tell you this. I don't mean to hijack the phone call here, but I got to tell you, when I was a kid, I forget where it even was. It was some place in Kennewick, it was on the Columbia River, and it was a little inlet that would then empty into the river, and I was just like floating around in my life vest or whatever. I was like probably 9, 10, something like that. And I'm not crazy about the water anyway, but my idiot friends had somehow convinced me to go out there. And I did sort of get too far down to where it was starting to like dump out into the river, and it's like my friends ended up tossing me a rope and kind of pulling me back in, but there are a few more creepy sensations in this world than floating in a body of water, like the river or the ocean or whatever, and you can feel the undertow, because it is very much like you can feel the water trying to pull you under and down. It is just the most. It's like a big wet gelatinous hand closing around your waist, trying to pull you underwater. It's the most terrifying sensation ever.
I remember one time when I was a kid, we were up on the Clackamas River, and I was fishing, and I had some small boots on, and I had a little trout pole, and I caught a salmon. And it pulled me down the river. Had one of those. You remember in the 70s when you had those, flotation jackets?
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it carried me down the river to the next bend, and I thought I was drowning. And I'm so afraid of water.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a bad. You're completely freaky. All right, that's Kenny. Good God. All right, I got to. Yeah, we got to move on from that. It's freaking me out again. Yeah, the undertow is the weirdest. It really is just like a big pair of like amorphous hands closing around your torso, like pulling you down.
Yeah, when I was in Hawaii, I got flipped upside down. I couldn't tell which direction I was up.
All right. Take a break here. It's 503-733-2970. Asking you to finish this phrase, quote, "The closest I ever came to dying was..." And the winning call at the end of the day will win the final pair of passes to House of Midnight and a copy of The Onion's new book, Destined for Destiny. 503-733-2970. Later on, we got Peter Carlin for The Oregonian and Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay there. Back after this.
Coffin your size. Mama, we're all full of life. Rich Emerson Radio Show. I'll take Roger Waters for $1,000.
All right.
Good God. I mean, it's a good song, but
yeah,
it's been done.
It's a really strong record. It's a really strong record if you can ignore the fact that it's like, I'm just turning it down. If you can ignore the fact that it's incredibly derivative of Pink Floyd. Like that whole part that's just that, the way that you would suffer your intended wife and mother.
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah.
It's just Mr. Like, you just picture like the giant animated buttock guy coming out with the judge's wing on. I'll play, if I get a chance later, I'll skip to the Liza Minnelli section there, which is short. Everybody's talking about it. It's the fact that she's on it, and it's actually very, she's only on for like two lines or something like that, but it is kind of the last thing you expect to hear in the middle of a song like that. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's your personal savior, Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Pakistan's goal for the Al-Qaeda is nothing but a pile of rubble. Pakistani troops, with the backing of U.S. helicopters, killed everyone in the school today after they were warned to stop teaching about terrorism or else.
I'm sorry? What?
We just bombed a school for terrorists. Into a pile of rubble in Pakistan.
Is that like one of those... Okay.
Yeah.
That's like DeVry.
I was just going to say, is that one of those... Do you wish to get a degree but find that you just don't have the time? Do you have to draw like a... If you can draw like a picture of Muhammad or something? Right. It's like a matchbook.
If you can picture of Binky the terrorist, then you two will be walking through the old...
Yeah, you can draw
terrorism.
A picture of a turtle clutching a scimitar. Mm-hmm. Here you go. Okay, fantastic.
So that's that. It is now closer to business.
And this is Scotty is noting that they all died as heavenly martyrs. MARTERS. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So you remember that guy who tried to set the church on fire last week?
Yeah.
Well, he was considered by a hospital therapist to be a model patient at the Oregon State Hospital, where he spent 2 years after killing his daughter.
Try to set the church on fire!
His name is Cam Shang Ching, but became Americanized as Dan Chan.
Okay.
Mental health officials... who could, assume responsibility for his management, agreed in September 1995 that the Oregon Psychiatric Society, who revealed his case, said, well, he wasn't that bad off. I have no idea what triggered it, said one person.
He seems very unlikely to.
As unfortunate as it is, this is not something that could have been foreseen given all the positive results. Because Mr. Chan was a model prisoner.
Isn't this a model prisoner? And when you say a model prisoner, it might be fair to ask why he was a prisoner in the first place.
Murder.
And this is because he killed a 4-year-old, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. Who could have seen that he would cause trouble if just let loose to roam the streets at will? All right, here's Tim Riley.
Oh, my goodness.
Should I be reloading one of the banks here?
Well, I guess we could, yes.
Why not?
Let's make it A.
Dare to dream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're good.
All right. Well, let's talk about the U.S. military, which cannot account for thousands of weapons turned over to Iraqis, according to a new government report. Apparently, the Inspector General's report says about 500,000 weapons that we gave them to turn their country into a state of freedom have disappeared. Some American military officers now have their doubts about some of the Iraqi leaders.
Some of the top-level political leaders are actually no longer sharing the goals that we have of a unified Iraqi government and may even be encouraging on some of these militias. So it's getting closer and closer to a major civil war, even if it's still one or two steps short of all-out civil war.
Now, if I give you these 500,000 guns, you're not going to sell these on the black market and then use the proceeds to engage in a jihad against us, are you?
We journey outside the bunker, but nobody wants to get hurt.
No. Oh, we promise. Give me guns now.
Well, this is the 40th anniversary of Ronald Reagan's first election as governor to the state of California. With that in mind, Governor Schwarzenegger says Ronald Reagan campaigned with class.
Ronald Reagan could throw a political punch as well as take one. But he did it with courtesy. He did it with decency. He did it with dignity. And he did it with humor. And most importantly, he did it without holding grudges.
It was like talking to him. It was like listening to somebody transmitting a Morse code. And things of this nature.
Well, here's good news for those listening in Oklahoma.
Hello.
Tattooing becomes legal in Oklahoma this week.
Fantastic.
And they have to be licensed from the State Bureau of Tattooism. State Representative Al Lindsay says his reasons for supporting legalized tattoos are not because he wants one himself.
I don't have a tattoo. I don't plan to get one.
Bob Costantino.
I don't like tattoos, but I think the most paramount thing of all is that people who get them should have the same confidence that they're not going to be made sick by a tattoo. Just like when you go down to the local hamburger joint and buy a hamburger, you know, you're confident that hamburger is not going to make you deadly ill.
Right, the hamburger is just like the tattoo.
All right, by the way, in case you're thinking about... Now, I'm assuming that this means, when they in this story, this story about the tattooing being legal, just reminded me of this story that somebody sent me this morning about... Now, I'm assuming when they say it was a teenager who had her breast pierced, I'm assuming that means just the nipple, right? I'm assuming that it's... Or do the kids get the whole thing pierced now? Is it just some sort of like an all-over...
I don't know. I've seen people with their foreheads pierced and...
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How do you get... There's not even enough skin there.
I don't know. I've seen it.
Oh, that's just begging to be caught on a pillow while you're asleep, too.
It's just begging to, like, laugh a little too hard and that thing just pops through your forehead.
Yeah, seriously. That's going to be a whole lot of, like, oh, I'm just going to turn over. And, she's going to come. Did you read? Oh, man. See, now I got all of these stories. There's a big story the other day about some chick that got her tongue pierced and then it, like, severed some artery inside that her head. I'll find it. A teenager who decided to get her breasts pierced. For her 18th birthday.
Are they really that scared of the word nipples that they have to say breasts?
That's why it makes me wonder when they say...
I'm really curious.
When they say get her breasts pierced, I'm wondering if it's some new kind of...
I think you should be messing around with this. I think that...
Well, not that we're doing it personally.
Now, see, what, you don't...
I don't... There's so many glands and stuff in there, I don't think you could get your breasts pierced.
I wouldn't think that people would inject botulism into their forehead, but I wouldn't think people could get their foreheads pierced. And yet, apparently they do.
Now that's what happens when there's, you know, empty space at these shopping centers.
Here's why I'm wondering if she got a non-traditional piercing done. A teenager who decided to get her breast pierced for her 18th birthday faces years of surgery after a flesh-destroying infection forced doctors to... remove the breasts.
Oh.
Stephanie Eddington of Crawfordsville remained hospitalized Friday at the Indiana University Medical Center, where surgeons also removed lymph nodes and had to remove infected skin all the way up to her collarbone. Doctors diagnosed Eddington, who had the piercings on August 29th, with necroticizing fasciitis, or... Here's the worst phrase you're going to hear all day. Gaseous gangrene. So there you go. Flesh-destroying bacteria. That's why I wondered if it was some new exciting kind of piercing that perhaps had not been...
Maybe. I don't know.
And perhaps not gone through the rigorous testing that one might expect of such a procedure. All right, let's take a couple calls here, and then we'll go back to Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. CJ, hello, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up? How can I help you?
And ladies. So I almost died, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, right? Asking people to complete this sentence. The closest I ever came to dying was...
Was... typically, a couple of buddies of mine make an annual pilgrimage up to Vancouver, British Columbia for an NHL game. This was about 6 years ago, and the game is usually Friday night, followed by Saturday night of drinking and debauchery. And
tell me this involves blood bouncing on the ice at some point.
We usually go to the Canucks Maple Leafs game, and which because there's more fights in the stands than there are on the ice.
Sure.
But unfortunately, the near-death experience did not occur in the hockey arena. Because the next night we went out to one of Vancouver's fine peeler establishments, and
that is to say a strip club.
It is a strip club called the Number 5 Orange, and it is blue collar strip club, if to be kind. And we didn't know, of course, about out of town,
of course, size.
What their schedule was. And at that particular night, we got a table right up front, right next to the main stage. Four of us. And,
tell me you got a flesh-eating bacteria from a stripper.
Oh, God. Well, I don't... there very well could be. You could mix in some flesh-eating bacteria into the story if you'd like. And let me preface this saying that... And you'll... I'll just get to it. You be the judge. To make a long story longer, that night was not only amateur night. It was we didn't know at the time, BBW amateur night, or beautiful women amateur night.
Now this is larger amateur women.
That is correct. Plus size, if you will.
Women of
girth. And so we were sitting up front, and a gal came on that was a good 6 feet, I think. And, of course, with her stripper shoes, she was probably about 6'8".
And how much would you estimate that she weighed?
I'm going to say if she was a buck, she was a good 255 to 60 American.
American. Fantastic.
Yeah, without the exchange rate, you know, a good plus on the Canadian side.
All right, and, so there's a 250-pound stripper.
Right, and she had wrapped, her gig was, she had wrapped herself horizontally, almost to look like a form-fitting pink dress, in probably about 60 yards of pink cellophane. And her gig was to then tie off the loose end of the cellophane to the center pole and then spin around the stage around the pole, unwrapping herself.
Why would anybody want to see this? This is like a thing at Pasta Works behind the meat counter when you ask for half a pound of applewood. Okay, go ahead.
So we're both intrigued and horrified at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like Monica Lewinsky in a song you don't want to look.
Unpeeling,
you
know, a sausage, right? Okay. So what happens?
So at right about, she's almost done. We're starting to see things we don't really want to see that are now appearing through the cellophane. At which time, the only alcohol that I can shoot anymore is Yukon Jack, which is not saying much. But they announced at that particular submission, for the next 2 minutes, Yukon Jack shots at the bar, $2. And with the exchange rate, it's like 50 cents. So I said, hey, we're out of shots. Everybody said yes. I ran to the, I got out of my chair, ran to the bar, ordered the first four, came back, set them on the table, went back to the bar for the other four, at which time the girl had now unwrapped herself in the cellophane, and my buddy, who loves poutine, don't even ask me what it is, but it just looks like mashed potatoes and gravy.
Right, it's a food, yeah.
He had a big bowl of that sitting in front of him on the table. There's four shots of Yukon Jack on the table, and
I feel like this whole story is just going somewhere so horrible. There's eight shots of Yukon Jack on a table, a bowl of haggis,
yeah,
a 250-pound stripper.
And again, this is going to have to be relative.
Let's bottom line this.
Is there a German liver somewhere?
Yeah, can we just... Let's skip to the bottom of the page here.
Here it is. So as she gets to the very end of the saran wrap, she goes to do her leg split finish, misses the pole, does a face plant off the main stage, directly onto one side of our table, which splinters it like a balsa wood airplane. and of course, here's Yukon Jack and poutine all over this poor, naked, rather large girl now on the floor. And I had a general metal-backed restaurant chair that looked like a truck ran over it. And I came back to I heard this crash.
So if you'd been there, you would have been crushed by a 250-pound stripper.
Right, and so the one I'm leaving up to you to be discerned by you and your professionals is, I may not have been killed, but having survived that, I probably would have killed myself.
You would have taken your own life, undoubtedly.
That's correct.
Yes. All right.
That's all I got. Oh, and the clincher is, I managed to go back to the hotel and Kurt Aunt Jemima for a good 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Thank you, sir.
Wow, I got a lot of interest in the middle.
CJ, he ended strong, though. All right, CJ, thank you. There you go. Good God Almighty. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Oh, bad news today. Ryan Felipe and Reese's Witherspoons reportedly have separated after 7 years of marriage.
Now, Sarah and I were just talking about this, and if you can't believe in that couple, who can you believe in? It's strange how, as a society, though, there are certain couples that it upsets us when they split up, and there are certain couples that it doesn't. Like, I remember, and this was probably too long ago for Sarah to really remember this, but I remember when Burt and Lonnie broke up. When Burt Reynolds and Lonnie Anderson split up, I remember everybody, the nation for like a day and a half, we were all legitimately sad about it, because it just seemed like that crazy couple was going to stick together. Oh, hello.
Sorry, I was trying to delete that.
Oh, okay.
I hit the wrong button.
But I mean, that just came out of the blue, didn't it? I mean, Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Felipe or Philippi or whatever.
Well, there've always been rumors that they've had problems for years, but I thought that maybe they were just speculation because they keep having the kids.
Yeah, but they just seem so balanced, and
they have like three or four kids now, I think.
And they just seem so well scrubbed and all American and so forth.
It's true, like they belong together.
It really does, and he just seems let's just say it, they seem so unbelievably bland, both of them, that you figure that they couldn't have any problems because they both just seem so boring.
Seem like they've been married since they've been like 10 years old.
I don't even know how old they are now, but you're right. It does seem like they got married while they were still in fifth grade.
Well, it claims here that she is 30 and he is 32.
I wouldn't even imagine that she was that old.
So they only have two children. That's what happens in California. After the second kid, divorce time.
Okay. And she's 30? Is that even possible? I mean, normally you're shaving years, but it seems like she's adding years. I would never have guessed Reese Witherspoon was 30, even with the two kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, Britney's got like five kids, and she's not even 25 yet. So, all right.
According to a statement from their people, we, their people, are saddened to announce Reese and Ryan have decided to formally separate. They remain committed to their family, and we ask you to please respect their privacy.
Yeah, be sure to do that.
Okay, all you paparazzi out there, fill up the gas tank, get out there.
Yeah, that's that. Fantastic. Jim Roop will be talking about that tomorrow.
Meanwhile, some nude photos of Desperate Housewives star Marcia Cross have apparently landed in the wrong hands.
Really? Or the right hands, if you're Rick Emerson.
Mm-hmm. Some 200 personal pictures, which he just happened to throw in the trash, have been obtained by David Hans Schmidt. He claims that the photos were found in a dumpster by one of his firm's employees.
David,
who was dumpster diving.
Okay,
not stolen.
Here's an immediate news quiz. David Hans Schmidt, who is? Sarah Dillon? Here's your gossip pop quiz. Who is that guy?
Is he the guy who releases all the sex tapes?
He's the guy who released the screech tape.
Of course, he's willing to sell the photos back, but is not revealing his asking price.
You know, here's the thing is I don't care about Desperate Housewives at all
in any
way.
She's expecting twins. She's a rather attractive young lady.
Is she? Well, she's got kind of. Okay, she's not a young lady. She's got to be almost 50.
Well, I mean.
She's not almost 50.
She has to be.
She's like. I think that she's in her 30s.
No. Here's how I know that she's not in her 30s. Okay, hold on. Before you look,
that is
okay,
a
before you look
attractive facelift.
Okay, but here's
the
thing.
I'm going to say 40.
Okay, well, she is absolutely no younger than 40 then, and I'll tell you why. Here's how I know. I was going to say, I don't
the
care about.
The standard issued nose.
I don't. Would you like the number one or the number three? Here's how I know that she's not in her 30s. Unless when I saw her, she was very young. Because I don't care about Desperate Housewives, but when I was a kid, I used to watch, as did all the geeks, I used to watch a program that came out of WGN called Tales from the Dark Side, which is sort of a modern-day Twilight Zone. It was like a syndicated cable version of the Twilight Zone. It was an anthology horror show, to which I can still do the full opening narration. I will and the closing narration,
please?
Too.
Both?
I don't wish to punish everybody by...
Please, at least the opening.
All right, fine. I can do the opening.
Shorter.
I can do the opening narration. Man lives in the sunlit world that he perceives to be reality. But there is, unseen by most, another world. A world that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side. And then like a terrible like cable access font would come up that said like Tales from the Dark Side and blah 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 blah. But there was an episode that involved a vampire. And it was a hot female vampire attacked some guy, killed him, but it was Marcia Cross. And women probably have this too, but guys have a thing for certain women that they will see when they were growing up. Even if you only see them once, it's like Colleen Camp. Colleen Camp, who Sarah Dillon will remember as the maid in Clue. I remember seeing Clue when I was like 12 years old and seeing Colleen Camp in that French maid's outfit, not being old enough to know that it was like a parody, that it was supposed to be a gag, that she was like a hot, big-boobed French maid, and just thinking she was the hottest thing ever. See also Elizabeth Daly as what's her name from Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Dottie. Anyway, so Marcia Cross on this episode of Tales from the Dark Side played this hot vampire, and I could have been no more than like 13. So she's got to be 40.
Do you want me to tell
yeah.
you? She's 44.
All right, yeah, I knew. I mean,
yeah, she was here for her age.
Well, I mean, who knows? If
she's probably only been under the knife once.
So, but I have had a thing for her, and I know it makes me sound like a pathetic man, and I am, but I have had a thing for her ever since from a single episode of Tales from the Dark Side, which I saw like 20 years ago. I have had a crush on her ever since then. You know, it does make me sound freaky. Do we have to break?
Yeah.
But what about Tim Riley?
Well, if you stop talking, then he could tell a story.
No. Oh, no, I want to hear these stories.
Now, we'll come back, and Tim Riley will give us a Darwin Watch. That's what he'll do.
How do you know what's coming up?
It says Darwin Watch in big letters. Hello. It's the Rick Emerson Show. I'm going to read just to give a little taste of what's coming up on the phones. Line 4, fell out of car. Line 5, shot in the head in Alaska. Number one, line 1, chased by family of baboons. See, if you go away, you'll miss it. 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show comes back. Don't go anywhere after this.